This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises and an anonymous donor. Spriggs Enterprises features the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning right back to you, Laurie. How's everything going for you?
Wonderful. A beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It certainly is a beautiful day. Isn't it nice? Okay. Every week, there's always something crazy to talk about. Okay. So as I was planning the show for this week, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. And then the balloon was shot down on Saturday. I said, well, I guess that's what we're going to talk about.
The Chinese spy balloon.
The Chinese spy balloon. And you know, it's really interesting. I mean, I once I decided that I was going to talk about that, I called Commander D. Cox, our China expert, and got him on board to come on the show. So I know he was just on a few weeks ago. But, I mean, this business with China is serious. And unless we have serious understandings about what's going on, then it seems like, you know, we're just kind of, you know, letting our citizens kind of, you know, go along blithely thinking everything is okay when things are not okay. And let me just give you an example of why I'm concerned about citizens not taking this seriously. On the way over, I was listening to another talk show. And the two guys who were on it were just, this doesn't really matter. Do you feel safer now that it's in the show? Yeah, I feel safer, blah, blah, blah. This was a national security disaster, okay? And I think that when you see what Deke is going to be able to bring to the table in terms of understanding it, then it will give you a sense of why it is so important for Americans to get the problem that's here. Chinese infiltration. We've talked about all this, whether it's the Confucius, you know, institutes, whether it's the fact that you have so many of these universities with so many Chinese students, whether it's this business of these Chinese police people in New York. I mean, you go down the list of things, and of course the biggest problem is Hunter Biden and the money coming from China to his family and the degree to which this family may very well be compromised.
And the President of the United States.
Well, he's part of the family, so yes, the big guy gets 10%. So what I wanted to do this morning was to get into this in more depth with Commander Cox. And then when he and I are finished, if there's time, then I will take a quick look at some of the upcoming issues that we're going to be dealing with the upcoming session that starts on the 7th of March, and we'll have our welcome back rally on the 9th.
We have him on the phone now.
I say, well, Laurie, thank you for letting me know. Commander Cox, welcome back to Common Sense Radio. Actually, it's the Watchdog. I don't even know which radio station I'm on.
The Conservative Watchdog.
Conservative Watchdog. I knew that I could figure that out. Hey, Deke.
Hey, good morning, Doc. How you doing?
If I can figure out what station I'm on, I'm good. Lori and I would just say it's a beautiful day here, and I know you're out in Texas, and it was a little bit chilly out there, so hopefully you've got a little bit better weather.
Yeah, we do. It's gotten better, but it's moving in again. How's everything back there at home?
Well, it's going good, but I was just relating to Lori how unserious some people were on a talk show that I was listening to coming over here about this whole business with the balloon, and they were saying things like, well, do you feel safer now that it's in the water and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just telling Laurie that I think that this is an abysmal way to approach something extremely serious along the lines of, I've characterized it as a national security disaster for what happened here. So, and I mentioned that you were coming on the show and that we wanted to talk more about this, to give people a better understanding of the scope of the problems associated with China and what they're doing and how all of this fits into this pattern that we see with them in terms of this war on the United States, as you've talked about so eloquently on this show, not just once or twice. So why don't we just kind of get into this and just kind of talk a little bit about the meaning of this balloon episode. But I know when we talked the other day, we want to try to do a little bit of a backgrounder on, you know, high altitude surveillance during the Cold War and now. So you want to just give us a quick rundown on that as a kickoff?
Sure. So what's interesting about this is, of course, that high altitude balloons have been, you know, in the intelligence collection repertoire for decades, you know, since the 1950s and 1960s when they were first leveraged. And, you know, what's out there in the public domain is that, you know, the United States, you know, began using them against the Soviet Union and elsewhere, you know, back, you know, about 50, 60 years ago, with many of them shot down in the early days, and, you know, and still active, you know, within other countries. You know, when we look at China, you know, people were surprised, you know, that we had this balloon show up and the way that it made its way into the press. But, you know, this is not the first incident that we've had. You know, the expert analyst H.I. Sutton published a piece over the weekend in Covert Shores, which is his own military blog, about the recent history of sightings. And, you know, just a quick rundown of that is that, you know, back in June of 2020, you know, the Japanese spotted a high altitude balloon over Japan. That was in June of 20, and then India also reported one in January of 22 off the Andaman and Nicobar Islands in their waters. And they assessed at the time, and what was published in the Indian media was that, you know, that this thing was loitering over Port Blair, which is one of India's primary and most important naval bases. And so, you know, it became clear and apparent, you know, just off those two sightings that something was going on, and that the mid-altitude collection game was changing. And then in February of 22, we had another one sighted off of Hawaii that was responded to by F-22s, and then most recently here this month we've had the one sighted down off of Colombia and Costa Rica, another one reported, you know, over Montana that then made its way down to South Carolina, and that one was very publicly shot down, brought down. But yet what was interesting is, you know, it was on Twitter, but not widely reported, was that within an hour or two of the shoot down off the coast of South Carolina, there was another, you know, shoot down of another, what was assessed to be a balloon that had crossed over from Canada around Billings, Montana. And so that one, we think, may have been the one that was sighted, that, you know, because there were two that were sighted last week, and they said one was over Montana, the other was over Canada. Well, we think the one from Canada finally made its way across the international border and then, you know, was brought down. And it seems to have been done by the Montana National Guard, you know, but it's not been widely reported or discussed. Right. When locals around Billings, Montana attempted to close in on the, you know, crash site, they were turned away by Humvees with National Guard markings. And so that was just a few hours before the balloon was brought down off the coast of South Carolina. So there's a lot going on here, right? And historically, it's you know, it's been definitely a intelligence collection resource for the United States. And, you know, and again, like I said, you know, that much is out there in the public domain. But I think what is less known, Lou, is just the history of, you know, of most recent history of the Communist Party, you know, sending these things up and, you know, putting them against their primary adversaries, or who they view as their adversaries, which, right, you know, Japan, India, and the United States are absolutely, you know, top three for Japan, right, or for China. And so it's very interesting when we look at just the recent pattern since 2020 of the sightings and, you know, the actions that were taken against them. What I'd also like to, you know, share with viewers is just the sheer size of these things. You know, we see the memes out there, and it's really hard to kind of get your arms around just how vast these, you know, stratospheric weather balloons, you know, converted to intelligence payloads, how big they are. You know,
right.
It's, you know, just the surface volume inside one of these balloons is you know, around 300, you know, cubic meters, you know, and it's a tremendous volume that's inside. And then their payload, you know, we see the solar panels on them, which are used for power. We know that they are, you know, that they are navigable and that they do have some propulsion, that they are able to change direction and maintain loiter, which is a very desirable trait, you know, in a stratospheric balloon, is to be able to have that maintain orbit over a target area and have what we call long dwell, which enhances your ability to collect and to especially beat weather. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes on there, but these payloads on these very large stratospheric balloons are, you know, can be, you know, the size of, you know, a couple of Connex boxes. You know, they,
right.
You know,
a couple of what?
You know, weighted correctly.
Laurie didn't understand Connex boxes. It's think of it as a big bus. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, shipping container.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you look on the container ships coming in and out of the Port of Mobile, you know, those are loaded down with shipping containers. You know, many of them coming from China, incidentally. But when we look at the payload on these stratospheric balloons, you know, they can be, as far as just size, they can be the size of one or two of these Connex boxes, again, depending on the load. But it's just a fascinating study and where the Chinese have brought their intelligence collection capabilities and, you know, what is also, you know, extremely interesting to kind of talk about and consider is that, you know, because there's a lot of speculation out there, you know, so, you know, people were like, well, you know, they did it to embarrass the United States. Well, you know, it's hard to say, you know, whether actors inside either the United States government or the Chinese government would have released enough of this information to get that out in the public domain and then create an international incident over it. You know, it seems doubtful that the Chinese would do such a thing willingly, and especially when we compare their public statements, which are unapologetic, and they use the exact same language in their public statements as we used to explain our use of this same capability decades ago against the People's of the Republic of China. And so, you know, it tends to, you know, beggar belief that, you know, that they you know, would have done this intentionally to embarrass the United States, but it's very clear that there are some strategic messages being sent, and one of those is, you know, China's intense interest in our strategic nuclear forces, especially when you look at the transiting of the two balloons that were brought down, you know, here over the continental United States. You know, you've got, you know, their direct path over, you know, ICBM silos in Montana and Malmstrom Air Force Base in Missouri. You know, it's just unmistakable what the targets of collection were. And it likely would have, you know, if you look at what would have been gained there, you know, they could have easily had a high resolution imaging package on there, some type of radar, you know, doing collection, or, you know, some other type of collection devices doing collection in the spectrum. And so, you know, when you look at the targets and where the balloons were, it's very clear that they were trying to collect on our strategic assets, our nuclear forces, and that's not good. You know, what some of our listeners may not be aware of is that, you know, just within the last 12 to 18 months, we've had long overdue public acknowledgments coming out of DIA and our own DIA and CIA, you know, making, you know, acknowledgement that, you know, that the Chinese have installed, you know, hundreds of new ICBM silos with potentially up to or exceeding 3,000 nuclear warheads. And, you know, this comes after decades of fushawing and dancing around the issue of Chinese interest in nuclear armament, where, you know, the appeasers that have just been part of the rot inside the United States government, the United States intelligence community, where these appeasers, you know, would just continue to downplay any concern and attach shrill labels to those who, you know, dared express concern over, you know, what we assessed as, you know, China's absolute interest in building out their strategic nuclear forces. You know, we could look at, you know, all the way back 20 years ago to the launch of the Gen SSBN platform, which is the ballistic missile nuclear submarine that the Chinese put in the water, you know, about 20 years ago, and the build out of those capabilities at Yulin Naval Base in the South Sea Fleet and up at Jigang Gishuang in the North Sea Fleet. You know, it's very clear, you know, even back 20 years ago, that they were investing billions and billions of dollars into their submarine force to build out a strategic nuclear capability that was, you know, long dwell and you know, mimic what we were doing and have been doing, you know, for decades with our own submarine force. So, you know, it is not any large stretch of the imagination to look at, you know, the current happenings and the transit path for these balloons, especially where they were assessed to be loitering, and not understand that the Chinese are very, very serious about countering U.S. strategic nuclear forces. And, you know, and you know, this provides a segue, by the way, to talk about, you know, motives and, you know, what would their strategy be if they were really looking at
right
at our strategic forces.
Deke, let me ask you this before we get into strategic analysis. Let's just go back to capabilities for a second. There is this question about whether or not the weather balloons are able to produce real-time intelligence data that is sent back, and whether or not we would have the ability to interfere with that. What is your sense of that?
So my sense of that is that Western intelligence agencies and governments and technologies, but especially open source technologies, commercial satellite technologies, especially communication satellites, have been so compromised by, you know, the People's Republic of China and the Ministry of State Security that, you know, there's just no question that they have assets on orbit, you know, space orbit, that could uplink or transfer, you know, any collection that they would have made.
Right.
And now, you know, the real question is it real time or near real time? And so real time would be like a live feed. You know, I wouldn't put it past the Chinese to have something like that fielded. You know, I wouldn't. The near real time capability is kind of where, you know, state of public acknowledgement was, you know, for years. You know, so their ability to, you know, to link that to a space-based communication satellite, downlink it to a ground station somewhere in China, or by the way, South America, you know, that's fodder for another discussion.
Right.
You know, but they, you know, but the Chinese have been active, you know, with signing agreements with other governments in South America, you know, to use communications facilities on top of mountains in the Andes, you know, and you know, you can bet that what that's used for is for uplink and downlink for satellite communications. So it's very interesting when we look at, you know, what the Chinese have done. And, you know, again, it's not much of a stretch to be able to, you know, to put two and two together and realize that, yeah, they probably are receiving at minimum near real-time capability, accurate within, you know, 30 to 60 minutes would be my guess.
Let me ask you this, just in terms of capabilities before we move into something sexier, okay? This question of dropping devices, whether they're drones or other types of devices, are we able to pick that up if they did decide to drop some sort of a device that had a solar capability to, you know, put out information? Or, I mean, let's say it was a biological weapons dispenser, something along those lines. Can we tell if they dropped anything like that and pinpoint it and go pick these things up?
Well, it's interesting that it certainly opens up a whole other can of worms to talk about and to consider. And so one of those would be, especially coming out of, you know, the SARS, you know, COVID, you know, period.
Sure.
You know, we're not really out of it, but, you know, is a question of, you know, for instance, you know, the Australians found cesium, you know, tiny little, you know, seed trace of cesium that had been dropped, I think, in Western Australia and just popped up out of nowhere. And, you know, that's extremely dangerous, right? Is any volume of cesium that is out in the environment, you know, that would be around people. And so, again, you know, I want to be very careful about, you know, we don't want to scare people, okay? But, it, you know, something like that could come in on an airliner, you know, just like the Wuhan virus, or, you know, yes, it could be, you know, one of the vectors of attack would, or, you know, placement, you know, for a biological agent, you know, could be from a, you know, high altitude balloon. And so, you know, again, I don't want to fearmonger people or scare people. It's just, you know, we have to understand that they now have a capability that is considerable and kind of goes, it's definitely asymmetric. You know, the more likely scenario would be that they would use one of these high altitude balloons, maneuverable, to perhaps bring in an EMP attack, you know, on the United States. And so, you know, for the listeners who may not be familiar with that, you know, an EMP attack would take out our electrical grid and much of our, you know, communications, our internet, our nodal power grid distribution, which, you know, would affect at minimum some of our ability to detect and counter, you know, any inbound strategic missile strike. And so, you know, it's really concerning when we stop and take a pause and take a deep breath and look at, you know, if you were going to, for instance, use a hypersonic glide vehicle, you know, for entry to come in and initiate a strike against Maelstrom Air Force Base or against those strategic missile silos, you know, if you were able to structure and layer a first strike where you felt that you could get those hypersonic glide vehicles in under our defenses or detection and our ability to counter that, and if you could do that by bringing in an EMP attack off of one of these stratospheric balloons, you know, that'd be a big deal, you know.
Well, that was going to be my next question about the EMP, because we've been talking about EMP possibilities, you know, for a long time. So here you have clearly the possibility that an EMP could have been on this particular weather balloon. And yet, and this was, you know, what I've gleaned from listening to various, you know, intelligence folks, you know, that this is just blind trust on the part of Biden that this wasn't going to be an EMP attack. That's why no one can understand why they just didn't take this thing out when it was over the Aleutians or earlier. I mean, what's your sense of that?
Well, it definitely reveals a couple of Achilles heels for us, and it begins with the top leadership, no doubt, right? You know, Biden can say that he initiated, you know, or ordered it to be taken out on Wednesday, but yet it was Saturday before the deed was done. You know, this is not hard, okay? This is, and you know, you're going to see write-ups. We're already seeing it, you know, in some of the, you know, the mainstream media outlets where, you know, there are people who are trying to cover for the administration are saying that, oh, it's hard to take one of these balloons out. It's not. it's not a hard thing to do. But, you know, we think that they were slow to respond. You know, there's absolutely no doubt that they knew the thing was there. You know, we can track space debris, you know, in the tiniest nth of sizes, okay, but yet we can't track a 300 cubic, you know, 300 million cubic foot, you know, weather balloon that's up there, right? And so it doesn't add up, you know, when we listen to the heavily politicized public comment about, you know, oh, well, we just found it, or, oh, you know, we wanted to protect Americans' lives, you know. And here's the thing. I want to make it sound like I am marginalizing any concern for people on the ground, especially when you're talking about something that big with a couple of Connex boxes on it, right?
Sure.
You know, you're not going to get space reentry burn up on something like that. You know, when it comes down, it's going to be, you know, a large mass of something landing somewhere. And, you know, but yet it doesn't make an awful lot of sense that, you know, that they would have waited to bring it out, you know, to bring it down over territorial waters instead of bringing it down in some wide open, you know, Montana grain field, or, you know, or somewhere in the Ozarks, you know. I mean, it just doesn't
well, I
make
mean,
a
they
lot
knew,
of sense.
They knew about it January 28th, so, I mean, they've had a long time to figure this all out. But here again, we get back to some explanations that kind of take you down the road of, look, okay, so Biden, he's either senile or he's been wrong on every foreign policy issue, so as Gates said, or he's compromised. And of those three possibilities, number two and three, to my way of thinking, are more than likely the issues. And, I mean, how we deal with what has been described as an unprecedented national security blunder, you know, takes you right back to, okay, how about the blunder in Afghanistan? How about, you know, other aspects of what they've done with the Iranian business, fueling the Iranians to be able to support the Russians with drones? I mean, so we're back to this, you know, this fundamental question about Biden. And once again, I mean, these are, I mean, I remember writing about this in 2020, October of, it was 2020, why Biden was not, you know, capable of being president just on the basis of foreign policy failures. And there's a whole list of them, some of which we just talked about. So, I mean, here again, we get back to this, but regardless of whether or not it's compromised or just, you know, always a failure, or now he's a doddering old fool, the fact of the matter is we as a country are at risk. And so I guess the real question is, you know, what can we do from the grassroots perspective, you know, to try to bring this kind of, you know, information to the top? And some of that has been, I think, taken care of with McCarthy, and he's got Gallagher in the China committee, and we have other folks talking about this. So I guess the real question for you is, you know, are you satisfied with the degree to which the Republicans are now moving, you know, since they're in a position of power, to take some steps at curtailing what has gone on under Biden?
Well, I am cautiously optimistic, but I think that we need to be extremely wary of distractions, like intentional distractions, you know, manufactured distractions. You know, and understand that there's the uniparty. You know, you can barely tell the difference between a captive GOP party, you know, held hostage by rhinos with absolutely no true conservative, you know, moorings or compass guiding them. You know, spending, profligate spending, you know, running up the debt, you know, willing to negotiate, you know, on all things, you know, that the Democrats have put in front of them. So there has been a little bit of pullback from, you know, from that, and you know, and they're offering a glimmer in some of the committees and the committee assignments, you know, and and to investigate certain things within the, you know, the administration and within the wider government. But, you know, people, what I would just cautiously urge people to continue to think critically and understand that, you know, this Uniparty, they're not acting in our behalf. You know, they're in it together. And you know, again, not sounding like a conspiracist, but you have to look at the other thing that may be motivating this is this need to show that the United States government writ large is incompetent and full of imbeciles, right? And so it's not just about Joe Biden. Joe Biden's a puppet, okay? When we look at you know, just decisions that have been made, you know, and you know, you can look at Milley, you can look at Austin at the DOD, you know, you can look at the behavior of DOJ and, you know, just the serial abuses across the federal government. You know, to answer your question, okay, it is now more incumbent on citizens than ever to make sure that we are thinking critically, acting locally, and, you know, and talking to our elected representatives, making sure that they know that they work for us and not the other way around, and that we're just not going to put up with this anymore. You know, that it's bad enough that China has laid bare, you know, our leaders and corrupted them through greed and vice and avarice, you know, but we have to stand up and demand better. And, you know, if they're not giving us what we need, what we want, then it's time for them to go. It starts with election integrity, but when it comes down to, you know, minute-to-minute issues and legislation that makes it on the slate or not, okay, that's us. That's you and me and Lori and others working as citizens, talking to each other, you know, crafting, you know, giving our best ideas, you know, drafting good legislation, you know, making sure that we're, you know, listening to Daniel Horowitz from the Conservative Review and you know, getting back to our true groundings as conservatives and taking action at the local level and letting that build up to the state and the national level. I'll say this because I know you have a couple other points to make, is that, you know, there is no substitute in this for the time of our children or our grandchildren to revisit states' rights within the United States Constitution and to begin talking to, you know, for instance, Attorney General Steve Marshall, you know, for the state of Alabama and others, to make sure that our wants, wishes, and desires are being telegraphed and written into Alabama law, and that we are able to defend ourselves within our 10th Amendment rights and others, to make sure that you know, we're not just laying prostrate, you know, waiting to get raped by the federal government. So that's what I have to say about that.
Well, obviously, I'm going to agree with all those things, and some of those things are taking place with the grassroots movement. There's no question. But when we get into this, you know, the higher politics of foreign policy and all like that, then it becomes a little bit more problematic about what we can do. Having said that, there's no question that we need to be, and as much as I hate to say this, communicating with, what's his name, Tuberville and Britt and Jerry Carl and the rest of the Alabama delegation. I mean, we all need to be doing that. So that's something that we can affect. But let me ask you this. I want to just ask you a couple of what-if questions on the higher strategic level, okay, where the Chinese are and what they're thinking. And we've had this discussion in part, you know, in previous chats that we've had on the radio. So let me just ask you this. In terms of the overall Chinese strategy confronting the United States, and as you've mentioned, you know, they have declared war on us through a public relations campaign. I get that. So does Xi now have, you know, a question in his mind about whether the issues that he is dealing with, the Chinese economy, with dissatisfaction over the COVID business and all the things that we saw with that, does that sort of take him into a situation where instead of waiting to 2024 or 2025 or 2030, whatever date you want to pick out, it makes more sense for him to act now while he has a compromised president and and a Secretary of State who is as equally compromised. But does that make sense to kind of what if this along those lines, rather than to think that, well, we've probably got about 10 years because that's their long-term strategy, as some people have suggested? What's your thought on that?
Great points as usual, Lou. You know, the bottom line on that is that she is now in a highly permissive environment to basically do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
You know, the reporting of the Chinese economy, you know, being on the ropes, or, you know, suffering, you know, capital constraints or something like that. You know, foreign direct investment in China, you know, continues to flow. You know, they do have debt problems, but, you know, because of the unholy marriage between, you know, the CCP and the state, you know, they can do whatever they want to make it look however they want and operate how they wish. And
yeah.
So the real concern in my mind is that, yes, you know, he is in a green-lit environment. You know, he's not looking at any caution lights and certainly no red lights. And he is in a permissive environment where he can move on Taiwan really anytime. You know, I think that they will probably wait sometime until late this year or, excuse me, into next year when we're distracted by the 24 elections and other things. But I think that, you know, the thing the world needs to wake up and understand is that, you know, she is not interested in stopping at Taiwan. Okay, he has made public statements,
right,
as have his strategists over the last many years, certainly going back 15, 20 years, you know, in addition to all of the lands that China has occupied forcefully, you know, boots on the ground. You know, they're not going to be content just to stop at Taiwan. They have laid claims to the Ryukyus and southern Japan, you know,
right,
the southernmost prefecture of Japan. They have laid claims to, you know, Korea, and the Philippines and others, and you know America and the West need to wake up and understand that, you know, that we have been horribly predated upon, you know, preyed upon by the Chinese Communist Party with COVID and the vaccines, you know, and all of that, you know. And you have to look at them in the Sun Tzu kind of shaping environment that they live in, which is the Chinese mind is a very dynamic place to be. And, you know,
yeah,
when we're playing checkers, you know, they're playing chess, or the Chinese version of that, Go, which is even, you know, 10 times more difficult than chess. And so, you know, they are definitely, you know, strategic thinkers. You know, if anything, you know, we may think maybe some slight advantage and tactical capability and our ability and willingness to fight, and you know, but do not underestimate Xi Jinping and his goals. You know, he absolutely has his eyes set on Taiwan, but what the world needs to wake up to, and certainly Americans, is that he has he's licking his chops for, you know, for other things like Okinawa and you know, other ports of call.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, though, because, I mean, the interesting thing about what you said is this permissive environment, okay? And if we assume that the permissive environment could end with either a Trump resurgence or a DeSantis-type president in 24, doesn't that suggest that perhaps for him it's a safer bet to do an EMP followed up with a Pearl Harbor-type attack, as we talked about earlier? I mean, while the green light is there, why not take advantage of it?
Yeah, it's true. You know, I think that they would be neglected
tempted
if they did not look to blind the mighty United States intelligence community and you know, our eyes in the sky and elsewhere, you know, with an EMP attack, you know, in the lead up to moving on Taiwan or some larger target. You know, people get fascinated about Taiwan, but, you know, I wouldn't rule out, you know, that China, you know, may move quickly, you know, in another direction, you know, after they've secured Taiwan. It certainly is number one on Xi Jinping's list, you know, but it's it's a real concern that I think people need to wake up to. And, you know, what I would also say, you know, just in closing, is that, you know, America needs to understand that the Chinese do not view themselves and being on the rise. You know, they believe that it's not going to be a multipolar world, as is often preached right. to us by the apologists and the engagers. You know, they believe in a you know, single superpower, and it's China, and they believe that they, you know, their destiny is to, you know, take on and utterly defeat the United States of America, and to the point that the United States of America is no more. And that fits, you know, uncomfortably snugly along with, you know, the World Economic Forum's, you know, Great Reset and Agenda 2030. You know, it is really, really concerning that, you know, that we need to wake up and we need to acknowledge that, you know, that there is a huge boresight that has been a huge target that has been placed on America and the United States and our Constitution and our democracy, and that it's being pincered between both communist China and, you know, the socialist globalist, you know, movement right. coming out of the UN and the WEF.
Well, Deke, as usual, you know, you've just put, but, you know, nailed it as far as the background that we're looking for and an understanding of what this has really meant. And I really appreciate you taking your time. I know you're busy out there in Texas, you know, but this is important, too, for people to hear and understand the true nature of what we're up against. So I can't thank you enough for coming on, and hope to see you soon. Oh, Lori has a question.
May I have one question?
Okay, Lori has a question.
So we shot down the spy balloons, but the data that they have already retrieved, we can presume they were able to preserve that by downloading it before everything crashed?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so
the damage was done. We just crashing them prevents
right.
future gathering.
But you see, it's not even just the damage of that. It's the whole idea that our sovereignty was violated, airspace violations. Who the hell has ever heard of this, okay? It just hasn't taken place. Although I will say this, Deke, in the popular press, or whatever you want to call it, Forbes and a couple of other places, they're already saying that this happened with Trump on three different occasions. And of course, all the Trump people are denying it, and I would have thought that if you wanted to talk about it, you know, you would have said, and you know, this also happened under Trump, blah blah blah. But I mean, is it your sense that this did not happen under Trump?
That's right. DNI, former DNI Ratcliffe, so that's the Director of National Intelligence, came out over the weekend and said, so he was Trump's, you know, Director of National Intelligence, said that it did not happen, you know, once during the Trump administration. You know, but to show you how the ping pong ball keeps, you know, coming back and forth, is that just this morning in Xinhua, you know, the Chinese tabloid daily, you know, they announced that the Chinese had shot down and brought down, you know, a high-altitude balloon from another nation.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Yeah.
I mean, but you see, that tit-for-tat, for that, I get that. But you see, what they're trying to do is take the blame from Biden and saying, well, you see, Trump let this happen too, and no one said anything. But the reality is, that didn't even happen. So they're going to lie about this and obfuscate and all the rest of the stuff they always do. But I'm glad Lori asked that question, because I had forgot to ask you about that. So
thank you.
All right, Deke.
That's a great question. Thank you, Lori.
Let's get that oil out of the ground in Texas. Let's bring the prices down, boy. Let's get going.
That's right. Well, hey, we're doing our best.
Okay. All right. Hang in there. We'll see you when you get back.
All right. Thanks, Lou. Thanks, Lori.
Thank you so much for your input. Remind folks again who he is and why he's qualified to speak on this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Commander Cox is a retired naval lieutenant commander, who was an intelligence officer, 8 combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan with the SEALs. So he has a long history in this, number one. Number two, he is a China expert, speaks the Chinese language, has been involved with this for many, many years.
Okay.
And so there we have it. So, no, he is definitely one of the China experts, Lori.